Hello everyone, John Hodge here with episode 7 of All Those Meats podcast in conjunction with the Hotel Anfield. I'm here with my good friends, Peter Shreversman, and the one and only Peter Beasley. Welcome to you, Pete, to Hotel Anfield. Great to see you, pal.
Yeah, nice to be here.
How's life?
Always nice to come to Liverpool. Yeah, good. Yeah, all good. No problem at all.
Obviously, over the next coming months, we'll be having a lot of ex-players and personalities who support Liverpool. As we go on now from Peter, time in Liverpool, time in Everton, time in Carlisle, time in America, frigging all over the place, mate. Wasn't it? But when it really hit on how it all began, Wall's End, wasn't it?
Yeah, Wall's End Boys Club. Yeah, so that was about walking distance, because there wasn't cars in them days. Mm. Walking distance was 3 miles from where I lived. And so I used to walk to the boys' club every night and walk home every night. So in them days, you didn't have to worry about what time of night it was, dark or whatever. It was just a way of life. But on my way there and on my way back, I kicked the ball all the way.
Yeah,
And obviously that helped when, without being big-headed, I ended up being two-footed.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, you've been better players than me. It's 2 foot. But
did that come from your dad telling you to do
that? Yeah, my dad told me, yeah. He said, basically, you've got to be two-footed. So he remembers the Matthews days and obviously, in terms of Newcastle, Jackie Milburn.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so he knew all that. And he was obviously a big football fan. But in those days, it was a lot easier to get to a game, as you know now. It's like impossible to get to a game now, no matter who you want to go and watch. But
what age was it that would then?
So I would have been 11 year old. Yeah, only 11 year old.
You played right the way through.
Yeah, I was there till I was 16, and then got the chance to go to. I went to Gillingham first, then Cambridge, then Oxford.
Did you?
I went to Oxford when Jim Smith was there. 1979, and didn't even meet him. But I'm not critical of that, because you know, although in those days there was one person for each team.
Yeah,
it wasn't 25 staff as it is now. Nobody's fault. But
what age were you then?
So I was 18.
Oh, right.
So that would be 1970.
So you didn't have a contact with no one, then you were just.
No, just to be fair, So Wall's End, as in the boys' club, they basically had a scout who worked for Burnley, but he thought I was good and sent me everywhere. I just went for one day to Burnley. And Harry Potts was the manager at that time. So went there and, everybody, everywhere I went, everybody was amazing. But I worked in a factory. Yeah. Are we allowed to swear on you?
Yeah, do what you fucking want.
Now, the reason I say is because I used to have to take a week off to go down to Gillingham. Yeah. So I'd never been on a train before. And so basically couldn't afford to go on the train, not in a negative way, but I couldn't afford. So I went on the big coach, really, just like,
you've seen
nationwide coach. And so I went on a coach all the way to Victoria in London. Then I had to get to Gillingham. Didn't know where it was.
Oh, it's miles away.
Well, I didn't know.
Google Maps, no.
No, well, no match. So basically, I had to get the underground and go into Kent. Where the fuck is Kent? I'm not embarrassed.
Tell you what, a lot of experience doing all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so, well, to be fair, Steve Bruce was already there and signed.
I played against Gillingham for Newport County, and Brucey was playing. And I always remember I was playing up front with Tommy Tynan, and Brucey was putting in his belt, and then there you could. And he went through Tommy Tynan. Tommy just got out the way, and he broke his own foot. Broke his own foot, Brucey. But I looked, it'd gone. But he'd done that trying to top Tommy. It's mad way that we did lose on the day. I think we lost 3-2 or whatever. But it's a strange thing. So I was in the lower leagues when you were doing all them type of things. You're just trying to find your way.
Yeah.
But you didn't play for Gillingham, no?
No. So I played in a trial game. And obviously, at the time, for whatever reason, I thought I wasn't good enough. But I understand that, because to be fair, as you know, although when you eventually get a chance, it's one person that's making the decision.
Yeah.
Now, if you go to an academy, it's like 8, 9, 10 people that are making the decision. So I wasn't offended. You know, I enjoyed the week. But when I went back to the factory on the Monday, fucking hell, you must be shit if you can't play for Gillingham. And so I had a lot of that. So I had the same when I went to Oxford, same when I went to Cambridge. And it's just one of them things. But then I got the chance to go.
Carlisle, was it?
Carlisle, just play one game. So obviously they're just an hour from where I was living and born, sort of Newcastle. But Bob Moncur, who had obviously played for Newcastle, last captain to win, anything, and to be fair, he'd be devastated when Eddie gets him to win something, because his record will go over. But to be fair, he was brilliant, and so he was player manager of Carlisle, but was at an age like 36, 37, where he didn't play himself in the team, as in the first team, because he couldn't run, with all due respect. But he used to play in the reserves. I didn't know this until obviously.
Yeah, I see that.
And so he plays in the game that I play in. And so
after the game... Was he playing centre-half at the time?
Yeah, playing centre-half, yeah. And so he's watched the game from there. We beat them 2-0, managed to score the goal. And then we go to a pub, which is like a mile and a half from there, but a famous pub in the northeast. So the Diamond, it's called. And so we go there, and to be fair, Blue Star putting on a spread for, like, obviously us coming from Carlisle, obviously not me, but the rest of them. And so he asked me what I was getting a week in the factory, and I said, I'm getting £20 a week. And he said, we're going to give you a two-year contract, and we're going to give you £30 a week. And you'll know, Aldo, because money wasn't important.
No. What year was that piece?
So that was 1979. So he gave me 2 years, and that was the most important thing, the time, because I knew I didn't have to panic.
No, absolutely. But you knew, like it's very similar to me in a different sort of way, because I didn't get an apprenticeship. But when you get asked, to sign a contract, you do. My dad's telling me not to sign it because he thinks someone better's going to come in, the Newport County. But I'm scared stiff because it's going to be one opportunity. You've been to all these places and that happened. A little bit of desperation by that time. Is that right?
No, without a doubt. You know, like, so as I said, in the 2 years was the massive thing. Forget the money, obviously.
No, that's irrelevant,
The 2 years of kicking a ball every day, I knew I did that on my way to work every day, so it was normal. But the fact to go and play at Carlisle, where Bob Moncur was player manager, didn't play himself very often, but they were a great club, an hour from home, so it was really easy for me.
Good attendances there.
To be fair, and within, being big-headed now, within 3 games of the start of the season, I was in the first team.
Yeah.
So on the opening day of the season, Bob Moncur said to me, I'm going to leave you behind to play in the reserves because we're going to Plymouth, which obviously is a long way but in those days... was like madness compared to what it is now. But anyway, he said, so I'm going to leave you behind. But he said, my wife Camille's going to watch you. And she's obviously a good judge. And so we played Wrexham reserves. But as you know, all on those days, when the first team went away, the reserves played on the pitch.
That's right, yeah.
So Brunton Park was a special pitch in them days. And so they asked me to play, and I played, and I scored a hat-trick. But the deal was, after the game, because I hadn't been home for a month, get the train home, and then get home to the family.
Yeah.
And then, but when I did that, I got a telegram on the Sunday. Didn't know what a telegram was. Can't lie. Didn't know what a telegram was. And then the telegram said, report back to Carlisle Station tonight. Bob will pick you up. That's all it said. Because apparently in those days, you paid for every word that you wrote. So
that's right.
Yeah.
That's
so
what you did.
Yeah. So it was short and sweet. And so when I got back there, it said on the thing, Bob will pick you up. So he picked me up. And I was staying with Bob and Camille. He really took me under his wing. And as we're driving back to his house, he said, do you know why I brought you back? I haven't got a clue. And I wasn't being clever or cocky or whatever. He said, we play Blackburn at home on Tuesday, and you're going to play. He said, but you've got a massive problem. How are you going to tell your mum and dad? Didn't have a phone.
Okay.
So I couldn't ring them home. So they never saw the game. So player manager, and you'll know him very well, and everybody in this city will know him very well, Howard Kendall.
Yeah, of course.
So he was manager of Blackburn, player manager, and after about 10 minutes, I nutmegged him. And he said to me, what are you doing, you little twat? And as you know, Aldo, and I don't mean to be cocky or clever about it, if somebody to nutmeg them is the best thing to do, you do.
Yeah.
And that's how I did.
Did you shout megs or nuts?
I can honestly say, Aldo, in all my time, other than training, because we did take the prison time, that I've never done it on the pitch, so I have nutmegged people, but I've never, ever. I'll tell you who did it to me. I played in the testimonial for Celtic, obviously, we were playing for Liverpool. You would have been there. Brian McClare.
Oh,
he
yeah.
He nutmegged me in that game, and he went nuts. And I can tell you, I went nuts as well. Disgrace. Like, to a model professional or a pro that wouldn't do it to you. As you know, like, banter, yes, but testimonial.
No, yeah, yeah.
Peter, your dad at the time kind of pushed you to be two-footed, which is really interesting to know. But who were, like, the footballers that were in the prime at that time, who were your idols during that period, making your foothold in the game?
Yeah, so my favourite player as a Newcastle fan was Jimmy Smith, Jinky Jimmy Smith, they call him. And he used to nutmeg people every game. But, like, for the right cause, not to take the mickey, Jinky Jimmy was a special player in the hearts of the Newcastle people. And he played with Super Mac. And people like that, Bob Moncur himself, you know.
Yeah.
He was a proper player, but like, had such ability.
He was one of from Tudor as well. Played
John Tudor. John Tudor was there. Stuart Barraclough, you know.
A good team.
David Craig, Frank Clark played in that team. Willie McFaul was the goalkeeper. You know, no, to be fair, it was a really good time to be in and around the place. And they had some brilliant players. But when you look at people taking the mickey, it is what it is, but it just, we've all been there, all the noisy, don't we?
Oh, we are too.
Yeah, to be fair, the bad news is,
you don't want to show
it. Yeah, but you don't want to show it, but inside you're fuming. But it's hard to hide it.
Some defenders in them days, if you said it in a game, you it's a license.
Oh, yeah. Well, in them days,
you're going to
wipe you out. Oh, you know, although nowadays, the first tackle was free, wasn't it?
Mm.
In any game. In my experience, like, referees would say, I've seen it, you've got 85 minutes to get him back.
Yeah.
But they, true, you know, because there was no cards when we first started.
That's true, that.
You know, so.
Referees are different than they should.
Yeah.
Well, good referees, I have to say.
Yeah, and also, although they didn't have to be up with everything, did they? Because they, like, so Ken Redfern, who's I watched the over 40s play in Newcastle now, and this Ken Redfern, he's 82 now. But he used to referee you and I like at Anfield and obviously when we're playing for Liverpool. But he's like, it's an over 40 game, so it's not quite the same pace. But he stands in the centre circle, never moves, spots everything. But I don't know if you know, although you're talking about the blue card that's just come in.
Well,
what I was going to say is, so in his game, in the over 40s, he has a blue card. And if somebody's getting aggressive and annoying, he sends them it.
Oh.
And to be fair, I can tell you, every time I watch him, within 15 minutes, he uses the blue card, but then he never has another problem. You might think,
it's a deterrent, isn't it?
Yeah, a bit harsh sending them off.
Hey, imagine it comes in. Man City with all these technical fouls that they do. And
you've been listening to the radio today, aren't you?
Yeah. Oh, no, they've been saying that a lot of times.
No, they were talking about it on the radio.
They're not the only ones. There's been a couple of other teams that do, but more so, Liverpool don't do them enough. The only one that's done it is young Clarkey. He'd done a technical foul the other week at Anfield, just before the
end. He must get that from his dad.
Do you know what? He came on, he's only on 2 minutes, and it was a great foul. And we all know we've done them ourselves over the periods. But it is something in the game that, you know, when it happens to you, it pisses you off big time. No, really does.
But as you've just said, it's the thing that you notice, how clever. You may not agree with it, but it's clever and it's part of the game.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You'll never change it.
So, Peter, how would you end up going from Carlisle to Vancouver? And then you also have then a very brief spell at Man United as well.
Yeah, so that was brief. But the Carlisle to Vancouver thing came about because Pop Robson, who obviously all of you all know, he played for West Ham, you know, really good
player,
football,
by the way.
And he was Bob Stokoe's assistant at Carlisle. And he said to me, there's an opportunity here. So this is 1981. There's an opportunity for you to go to Vancouver. And I can't lie to you, James. I said, where's Vancouver? But I'm telling you, and I'm being serious now. So this is 1981, so I would have been 20-year-old. There wouldn't have been a kid in school that I went with that would know where Vancouver was. So then he said, it's in Canada. So I said,
it's not just
Canada?
In Canada. It's the other side of Canada. I went there a few months ago.
No, but to be fair, it's obviously you might not have seen much of it all, but it's a brilliant place.
It's a lovely place. Yeah,
so... So Pop Robson came to me and he told me it was the NASL and then obviously you couldn't see footage in those days, James, but he told me about, so he said, the reason you have to go, like a lot of money for Carlisle, but the reason you have to go is because in your first year, you'll play against Beckenbauer, Pelé, George Best, and Johan Cruyff.
New York Cosmos and all that.
So you couldn't turn it down.
Yeah.
It really was amazing.
What did you go for? How much was that?
275,000. Which in 1981 was a lot of money, you know. So Carlisle couldn't turn it down. I understand that. But Carlisle were very clever. And so, as you know, the American League summer, our league winter. So Carlisle made a deal where I would basically go for 6 months and then I would come back and do the winter for Carlisle and then go back. And then obviously after that.
Did you get more than 30 quid a week?
To be fair, I think at the end of me leaving, I was on about 300 quid a week. Well, but to be fair, although the great thing is, and you know, so money's important, it always will be. But when you're over there, you get a free apartment. And I don't mean to be cocky about it. Everybody got a free apartment, all the players we had. So Johnny Jarvis was the manager.
Is he?
Yeah. Ah. So Peter Lorimer was his assistant. Terry Yorath was his captain. So they honestly, the people that were there, so Dave Thomas, you remember Dave Thomas, the winger?
Yeah.
They had unbelievable players. So they took John Whale.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had John Whale, Roger Kenyon.
Roger Kenyon,
everything, you know. They had unbelievable. So almost every player was English. You know, you have to have a certain amount of Canadians. But that's how the sort of Man United thing came about, was you have to have a certain amount of Canadians or Americans. You can have either, obviously. And so we played against George Best. And beat San Jose in San Jose, American Independence Day. And he said, what part of Canada are you from, son? I said, I'm from Newcastle. He said, in England. I said, yeah. He said, I'm going to get you to Man United. And so he used to come and visit me in Newcastle. So he used to, when the season finished, he used to come and visit me. And it was unbelievable. And he got me the 6 months at Man U. But unfortunately, and I don't mean this in a negative way, and all I understand, Norman Whiteside was there, child superstar. Mm. And I really mean that. So he was 17, just been to the World Cup with Billy Bingham in 82. Unbelievable.
He was the youngest player to score in that World Cup. In the World Cup,
And so Frank Stapleton was there, Jimmy Greenough. On one wing it was Steve Coppell, on the other it was Gordon Hill.
Yeah.
So the midfield was Brian Robson, Ray Wilkins, Arnold Murin. And the back four was like John Gidman, Martin Buchan, Gordon McQueen, and Arthur Alveston. It was like an unbelievable team. Gary Bailey was a goalie. And so the 6 months was amazing. So ultimately, I wasn't good enough. So I played in the reserves with Mark Hughes. And so great time. Loved every minute. It was a off-season for me anyway, in the sense of I'd been to Carlisle, and so I just wanted to keep playing. So for 3 years, I played non-stop. Right. But I'm not complaining because I loved every minute of it. But to go there, and then Big Ron just said, we're not going to keep you. So the deal I had was Vancouver got the money or the fee and made the interest on the 6 months and then give back whatever, the same fee, but obviously they made the interest. So it worked out brilliant. And then...
So you went for 150 grand then, wasn't it?
You know, so the next one, so that I went there for 250 to Man U, but then the next year, when I go back to Newcastle, that's when I go for 150.
Yeah.
And it was that like, must have been special for you, right, to go to Newcastle.
So in them days, there was no mobile phones in England, but there was mobile phones in Canada and America.
Then Big Brick.
That's exactly what it was all about.
I've just checked, I wasn't alive then, so I can't tell you if there were mobile phones in Germany or not. But
I'd be shocked if there were. So, so as you say, although a brick, but we all had club cars, every one of us. And so we used to go away for 10 days at a time, play 3 games, 10 days at home, 10 days away, 10 days at home. But when we used to come back, we used to go around the shopping malls and whatever, with the wives and the girlfriends. So, and some obviously had children. So basically, on my brick, my phone starts ringing. So I only think it can be one of the players, because we all had the badge on the door, so we all knew we were in the shopping centre. So I thought it was one of the players. And so he said, it's Arthur Cox. So I had never heard Arthur Cox speak. Really hadn't heard him speak, so I didn't know what he sounded like, Yorkshire, Mancunian, whatever. Never heard her speak. So anyway, I told him F off. Because I thought it was one of the lads. I thought it was one of the lads in the, basically in the car park. Had seen my car. Let's have a bit of fun. So anyway, so didn't think anything about it. So I still thought it was one of the lads sitting there. And then I thought, maybe not. And then the phone rang again. And Arthur Cox went, don't hang up. Don't hang up. And so I said, he said, obviously you're going to leave. We guess you're going to leave Vancouver in the summer. And we're going to buy you. And obviously nobody had ever told me, so there was no tapping up in them days. So didn't have a clue. And he said, the chance for you to come back to Newcastle. So having got £300, my wage went up to £400. And so Arthur Cox said to me, how much do you get a week? And I said, £400. And he said, we'll give you £300. And I said to him, I said £400. He said, oh, I heard you. He said, but to play alongside Kevin Keegan, that's got to be worth £100 a week. And so, to be fair, easy. And I really mean it, because I've just spoken to him. I've been talking to him for half an hour on the way down. Still speak to him every week. He's amazing. He's 84 now.
Yeah.
Still sounds the same. Still sounds scary when you talk to him.
Yeah, old school. Yeah, proper.
Absolutely.
He had a great name, you know, Len Ashurst and Jimmy Goodfellow. The old... Worked up that area with him, but he had a great name within football.
What a gentleman he was when he was here at the hotel as well, making the time for the people. And
yeah,
yeah, Kevin,
yeah,
loves him. Yeah, they're like brothers. Like, hard to say, but like Arthur was the reason that Kevin went to Newcastle in '82, mm-hmm. a year before me. And to be fair, the friendship is like incredible, you know.
What was it like playing with Kevin Keegan that season? Obviously, you got them promoted back up to the first
division. Yeah, to be fair, James, it was like, so, all, you know, Arthur was like one of them, like, so come back, you're going to play alongside Kevin Keegan. But we had Chris Waddle, we had Terry Mack, and Terry Mack, as in Terry McDermott, was a superstar.
Oh, what a player.
Yeah, he was an unbelievable player. But he really was unbelievable.
Great gentleman as well.
Yeah, too. Really yeah, funny. So he was a mickey taker, but in them days, as we say, keep saying it was allowed. So he'd taken the mickey and like, he used to run for fun and used to run beyond me so many times. And one day I said to him, why do you keep running past me? He said, well, I don't know, Pedro. He said, but one of these days you might pass me the ball. and so then obviously he scored a few more goals near the end of the season because I understood what he was doing.
Hey. Did he ever score some the goals he scored for Liverpool? I watched him play all through my teenage. What a great player! But some of the goals he scored are just unbelievable, incredible. Mm. Nearly you watch a montage of his goals. Honestly, it's just so good. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, and scored in European Cup finals. You know, like, unbelievable. You know, he obviously still lives in Newcastle. You know. Suffering a bit at the moment, but being
amazing. We see him every week here.
Yeah, which is
he
brilliant.
To every game, Teddy,
no, which is brilliant. And to be fair, he was a superstar of a player. Him and KK, as good as Arthur was, they almost ran the show. But not being busy or whatever, you know, they didn't frighten me and Chris Waddle and Kenny Warren and Glenn Rhoda played for us then and Jeff Clark. And, you know, we had a good team, but without them, we wouldn't have got promotion. With them too, we got promotion. And unfortunately, when we got promotion, everything changed. We ended up with your mate, Big Jack, who was a brilliant, brilliant person. And I really mean a brilliant person. But his style of football, as you know, although you didn't know then, but you know now how I played.
You've gone from obviously getting a ball down and playing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jack, I know how Jack tactics are, you know. But, and it was, he was like, route one. Press like Jürgen press. We've spoke about it before. You know the way Jürgen presses and all that hard work on the jack. One player lets you down, it goes through the team and you struggle. But I can see where you're coming from. So you probably bypassed many times.
Yeah. So
who's up front? Was he then? Was still Kevin?
No, he'd gone. Him and Terry had gone. So Kevin retired. You know, and Terry went to Cyprus.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So I take it with Jack, he would have gone and got a big centre forward.
Two.
Who were they?
Tony Cunningham.
Oh yeah, good lad. Tony,
lovely
yeah.
lad, really nice, yeah. really nice lad. Yeah. But technically not amazing.
Was Mick
Arthur? No, Mick had been there with Arthur before
that's
I arrived.
Right, yeah.
George Riley.
Oh, Big George, did he go? I remember now. So, now, George Riley played for Watford. He was 7'6". He was the biggest footballer. And that's what I was just asking you, Jack. Because you just get the ball to the fullbacks, play it in, you know, let them, you know, go for the balls with the centre and pick up the pieces and get the second ball type of thing, wouldn't it?
No, yeah. Well, you wouldn't have played many games with them, although I don't mean to be cheeky, but John Anderson was a right back.
And I played with Ando.
Yeah, I knew you would have played with him, but I wasn't sure how many games. But he used to, so the first day we started training, Jack, who was an amazing person, like he's off the field, although I knew no better than me, if you're not talking football, one of the nicest, funniest people I've ever met. Yeah, and I really mean genuinely nice. Like, but so anyway, so obviously Ando. So Jack, first day training, he gets Ando on the right corner of the halfway line, just in the little box there. So in his own half, and he said, I want you to boot that ball alongside the 18-yard line, the one going towards the goal, and the corner flag. So when you hit it on our pitch, as soon as it goes up, comes down, it'll die because the pitch is rubbish. And so he said, that's what I want you to do. So when it lands, we'll be onto it. And so, and obviously then we had Big George and Tony, and to be fair, he just kept launching the ball. But so Ando couldn't get it right. And I don't mean this horribly, because Ando is a good man. He's still doing Newcastle games for the radio. Man. Good man. So Jack said, yeah, hang on. So Jack's in his suit. He's actually got his suit on. And so he says, yeah, I'll show you. So he takes his jacket off, gives it to one of us to hold, and then he takes his right foot, like takes his shoe off his right foot. And so now he's got a sock on and a shoe. And he went, this is not what I mean. And so he runs and he launches this ball. And honestly, you couldn't have put it there with your hand any better. He just landed it. And like, and then obviously we're now hemming them in, as it were. And, but to be fair to him, he was amazing. I really mean amazing. So we, in our first three games, although, so Arthur's gone, Kevin's gone, Terry's gone. Our first three games. So we win our first two. Okay. We won away at Leicester on the opening day of the season. Gary Lineker was playing for Leicester. And then our third game, we've won two. We're playing Aston Villa. And we are the only two teams in the league at the time that had both won the first game. Yeah. So Colin Gibson, do you remember Colin Gibson, the left back for Aston Villa?
Yeah.
He said, lads, any chance we can have a draw? He said, he said, our bonus is kicking today. And if we're top of the league, we'll get double bonus. We beat them 3-0. you can't do that sort of thing. That would have been illegal.
So did Jack sell you to Liverpool?
No. So Willie McFall. Okay. So Jack left.
Right. So he must have been there long then.
No, right? 2 years. Yeah. Maximum 2 years. And to be fair to him, as I said, although I wasn't being horrible, like away from the grass, as in the training, so you have a lot of time on the coach, travelling and all them and them days. He was just banter all the time.
Yeah, you know,
because there was no TVs on your bus. So you needed a bit of fun.
Card school as well.
Yeah, and he's come down with his cigar on and all that, you know. And the driver's fuming because the bus stinks. But that's how he is and that's how he was, you know.
He didn't get looking with Jack, by the way.
No, to be fair. So we got knocked out of the cup, although I couldn't tell you the year, but in the third round. And so he took us all to Benidorm.
Okay.
He took us all the way to Benidorm.
Bonus, isn't it?
To be fair, in January at that time, you know, like, and obviously in them days, not many teams went on holidays or breaks or whatever. So anyway, we go to Benidorm and we get to, like, so we don't know, but he's got his mum and obviously Pat, his wife, he's got them.
He took them.
He took one of us. We didn't know this. They're on the trip. So, but we don't know this. So they obviously get on the plane. And so we get to the other end. And what he's done, although, he's split everybody up. So Chris Waddle roomed with Steve Carney. I roomed with Glenn Roder. Yeah. But we didn't know. We were staying in two separate hotels because it was a cheap deal. So when we get to the first hotel, he rules off, say, eight names. You get off. But he knew all they roomed with the other eight.
Yeah.
So everybody lost their partner. Mm-hmm. So Steve Carney, one of the lads, he went, I'm not getting off. I'm rooming with Waddler. If he's not getting off, I'm not getting off. And it was like, just like a little stand-up. And in the end, Jack said, I don't care what you do. Because obviously you have to make it up, you have to decide. So some of the lads made it so that they went with a normal partner and then Steve Carney could go with his normal partner.
He split it up, yeah.
Yeah, so. But he wasn't bothered, you know. He wasn't like, who's rooming with who? He didn't care. He got told these are the lists. But to be fair, we went over and we had a brilliant week. Had a brilliant week. So hardly did any training other than a bit of running on the beach on the morning.
Yeah.
And to be fair, where we were running, he was just walking alongside us. Go on, keep going.
But you weren't drinking, Peter, were you? Is that the case? That you
I wasn't drinking
at the time. No.
No, I wasn't.
I think
the rest were.
It shows because you actually remember so many things. I think you're going to do very well in our quiz at the end, yeah. Because you actually remember while other people remember as much.
To be fair, it just is what it is. And what I mean is, good or bad, and I mean this, Peter. You had a brilliant time.
Yeah.
It's very rare.
You like,
came
you like
from
that. To be fair, you know, when like we, obviously, it's part of football going on about it. Loads of times, the drinking culture. And when we went out, especially pre-season, though, we had the dog day with Liverpool and all that. Peter would always turn up, or the Christmas day, whatever. He always turned up. He didn't have to drink to, you know, to get involved. You know, we respected that. But at least
no,
Peter
that's the great thing.
Up.
What Aldo was saying is nobody forced me to have a drink.
Yeah.
You know, they forced me in a nice way. We want you to still be there, sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it was never like, you must do this, you must do that.
Yeah. But while we are talking about that, it's quite a serious topic, really, drinking culture and football and so on. So might as well take us, of course, a little bit. But back then, do you feel like there was the same? Did you feel a bit of peer pressure there? Because, you know, I mean, again, drinking culture is still relatively big in football these days. I mean, truth be told, at Hotel Anfield, that's obviously one of the ways we earn money.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, on a match day and friends coming together having a drink. If everybody had a Diet Coke, it wouldn't go so well for Hotel Anfield.
I was probably lucky, Pete, in the sense that the roommate I got when I got here, so I didn't pick him, was Barnsley.
Mm-hmm.
So Barnsley wasn't a pint man, might have a glass of wine, you know, so he wasn't a drinker. You know, obviously he'd have a glass of wine or whatever. But most of the other lads, even at Newcastle before I left there, it was pints.
Yeah.
You know, everybody drank them. So that's why I think that we as a group of Liverpool players were the best. Because everybody drank, but we had really good players. You know, and people like Alan Hansen, who was obviously a superstar, he knew how to get us in the right frame of mind, at the right time. And to be fair, brilliant captain, brilliant player, but everybody respected each other, you know.
Yeah.
And so in the dressing room, not in a negative way, but there wasn't many young lads, if any.
Mm.
You know, we got David Burrows, who came in as a young lad. Gary Ablett sort of came through the system. But
it was an experienced age.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. There was hardly anybody under 25, if anybody.
So when you arrived, obviously, British record fee, £1.9 million. Ian Rush has just gone to Juventus. How was that adaptation? Did you feel pressure?
No, and I really, it sounds as though, like, why would I? So at the end of the day, and to be fair to Kenny was amazing. So he was like, when I first met him, so I met him at Parboard with my wife, and he thought he'd seen a pressman, and he may well have, so I don't mean that in any way. He said, we'll go straight to the ground. And so we came straight to Anfield, and then he told me about the fee, forget the fee. That's our choice, you know. But I want you to wear the number 7 shirt. And when I went in to see the chairman, obviously John Smith and Peter Robinson, the secretary, as it was in them days, you know, he told me what to say, that I'm going to be the new number 7, taking over from Kenny Dalglish. And when I was talking to them, they weren't interested. All they were interested in is like, how much you want there, sign in and done. But to be fair, they were brilliant. And Kenny was brilliant, obviously. Brilliant to me, because he obviously, maybe he had gone out on a limb in terms of the fee, but that was on him, not me, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah.
To be fair to him, he obviously told me he chose me, which is good. And to be fair to him, and Aldo will know, there could have been a lot of times, and I really mean this, not in a negative way, he could have left me out, but he kept picking me. He really stuck by me.
You look at when, obviously, I came in to fill Ian's boots. Peter came in because Kenny just retired to fill Kenny's boots.
Mm.
You know, that's a big aspect. When I signed, and I didn't get many games that the last few 4 months, whatever the season, I went and seen Kenny this day because I played one game, started, and I scored. We won 1-0. Then I was out the next game. So I just went, what's that all about? He said, well, look, we play through the middle at the moment. You know, that's the way we are. You know, the players, the suitors, we're changing all that. You know, you're the first one. There's others to come in. And not knowing that Peter was going to come in and aren't he real? So we're going to go different ways, going to go out wide, we're getting balls in. We're going to change the dimension of Everton. So that's what happened when Peter came in. So it wasn't 4-4-2, as I said before. It was 4-4-1-1 or 4-2-3-1. Right. People always say about, you know, us, how good we are. We were the bollocks, by the way.
Obviously.
But people didn't really that. And they go like Barnsley, Beards, Aldridge and all that. But it wasn't. Ray gets missed out because I led the line. I was the one who led the line. Peter, he wasn't up alongside me, Peter. Peter dropped. Liverpool always done that. I think we talked about it before over the years with St John and Hunt and Keegan and Toshak and so forth and so forth. That was it. I was there and then I'm looking at Peter there. Wow. I'm looking at Ray there, me mucking with Oxford and Republic and Barnsley there. That's a triangle in the half, by the way. It really is. I'm not talking big about myself. But that soon as we played, probably in pre-season, we beat someone 5-1 in Oslo and not a team. And I knew I went to bed that night. I scored a hat trick. I thought, you got 1 p.m. thinking, this is going to be some ride, this, yeah, by the way. Because it could have been 10. And then we played Arsenal first game of the season, didn't we? You know, and all of a sudden, this formation is made for each other. It was just, well, I don't know how you felt when you first came into that formation with the way you played.
I have to be honest, because obviously Barnsley was one side and then Razor on the other side. So Razor, Aldo probably knew a lot more than me, James, but we went up. So probably after about 6 or 7 games of the season, we went up to Dundee to play in the testimonial.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
But Kenny knew that was happening. So Kenny said to me, after we play on the Saturday, because we went up on the Sunday, he said to me, we'll pick you up on the way. Because my in-laws lived at Carlisle.
Right.
He said, we'll pick you up on the M6. And so pick me up on the M6. And like, he said, there's somebody at the back of the bus. You might want to go and meet him. It was Ray Howard.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know he was coming.
His first
so in them days, obviously, you didn't know, like, if you were buying a player, it was very quiet, it was hush-hush.
Yeah,
people talk about people being tapped up, so didn't happen with me, but it might have happened with other people. But, like, Razor's on the bus, and then, even though we'd been good really early on, and obviously we went 29 games unbeaten, Ray was just the final piece, because as good as Craig Johnson was, he couldn't slow down, and I don't mean that in a nasty
way. Ray had a bit more finesse about
him. Yeah, he was always 100 miles an hour, so... Craig was probably a better defender in terms of the game, but when we had the ball, which was Kenny's big concern, Ray could keep a hold of it. And to be fair, even now, we played in Ireland last year, might have been the year before now. Anyway, but
last year,
Ray Houghton, you can hear him pass the ball, move the ball, like, don't stop the ball. And like things that we did at Liverpool, so we. I'm being big-headed now, but we were the best one-touch team in the league, in my opinion. Obviously. And we knew how to, and then we had Jockey at the back who could bring the ball out for fun. And
stick.
Yeah, to be fair, Guy Gillespie, and then obviously we get...
Most through, wouldn't
And then we've got Nico on one side, you know, and we have Bally Venison, we have Abbo, you know, we have so many great players in the one, you know, we have is Ronnie Whelan, who was like, wow. I loved Ronnie. I thought he was unbelievable.
He's
underrated
a little bit.
He was the sort of...
Took for granted.
Yeah, and he was the one-touch king in the midfield. You know, he...
And he could... He was...
Oh, he was naughty.
He was next to Nathan as well, by the way.
When you said about getting done before, he was... We're good at it. But in those, as Aldo was saying, it was allowed.
Well,
this is right,
sorry. This is the All Love Meets podcast with me, John Aldridge, Peter Beasley, Jane Pearce, and Peter Shriversman.
Although you mentioned before, Highbury opening weekend of 87, 88, that kind of set the tone, didn't it, for an unbelievable season, 29 games unbeaten en route to winning the title.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Obviously, they were really good at the time, Arsenal. You know, they had good manager. The place was, they fancied themselves for the league. You know, they were supposed to be up there with us. And it was always a test, the first game of the season, you know, going to one of the better clubs. So you've got to put, you know, you've got to show people, you know, their expectations, especially for Liverpool fans, the worst team was in pre-season. And yeah, we clicked early on and we won a free kick quickly and Peter got it down quick, played it to Barnes. He whipped in a lovely cross and I again beat Adams to the ball in the air like he used to all the time and put it in the top corner. And then it was, we played some great stuff, but Arsenal got themselves back in the game. And then Steve Nicholl scored the most unbelievable header. I don't know, 10 minutes ago. It must have been from 20. It seemed 20 yards. Am I exaggerating?
No, it was certainly on the line, if not, but on the angle of where it went from there, obviously it was 20 yards. It's amazing. But to be fair, it was a very warm day, wasn't it? It was a really warm day, but to be fair, when you get back on the bus, as we did in those days, you didn't fly or anything in those days. Just gives you a good feeling, you know, because they wouldn't have wanted us to play them on the first day and we wouldn't have wanted to play them.
Yeah.
No, that's how it works. You want, not in a negative way, but you want an easy start. But for both of us, it was a tough start.
You were worthy of it though, weren't we?
Oh, yeah. Not to be fair, Kenny was buzzing and we all know more than me, but I didn't really know what Kenny's mood was and how it worked. But after that game, he was buzzing and rightly so, to be fair, because he had a lot of players, so obviously you can't choose more than like 13. But in those days, he had top players even weren't in the squad. So he obviously knew what he had and tried to get it going. And to be fair, it was a perfect start.
I always remember, because we had to play a few away games first, because the bottom of the cop had collapsed.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we played three or four away games. But one of them was Coventry away in the midweek. I think we won 4-0 or 4-1. We just tore them apart. And the manager, what's his name? He's a lovely fella.
Yeah, John Sillett.
John Sillett, what a lovely fella. And I remember seeing him after the game and he just said, that is one of the best performances I've ever seen.
Because they'd won the FA Cup the season
just
before.
Houchin and
big Brian Kilcline.
Big killer, what a great fella, So we started to get momentum early on, you know, and we went to games, I wouldn't say being arrogant, but a nice arrogance thinking,
belief,
we'll win this game.
Yeah.
It's not a matter will we win it, how many will we win it by?
Yeah.
But that's the way it was. We knew we had something special. And not many teams at that time could actually deal with it.
Yeah.
And also, James, Kenny didn't have to change the team. What I mean by that is he didn't have like 25 players as they have now. So now you've got a lot of people to keep happy.
Mm.
But most of the 14 that we had, 13, 14, you know, were always on the bus. So everybody was always together. And as Aldo says, you know, a perfect start. You know, we probably would have settled for a draw. It sounds weird at Arsenal. But because you win, then everything just gets better and better. And to go, as you just said, 29 games would be, like, I've never experienced it. And I wouldn't have thought Aldo had, you know, like, for us, amazing thing, but it's amazing what it meant for the people. So yes, it means something to us, but it's our job. We just go and play. But for the fans and, you know, every time they went away, they, you know, obviously it's hard now, but in those days, the amount of people that managed to get to away games, considering the money situation, was incredible.
There was a buzz, proper buzz about the place.
And you scored 18 goals in that first season you had at Liverpool. 14 of them were after Christmas.
Yeah.
So, like, what changed?
No, to be fair, it's quite funny you say that, Jim, because I honestly, in the first 4 or 5 months, and I really mean this, everybody's really nice and say, oh, no, I was shocking. I genuinely was. Now, so he's going to say the same, but I genuinely was. I couldn't hit a barn door.
That's because you put your heights there to get to. And even if not going, and I'd never have thought that with Peter. We've just gelled so well, but sometimes if what someone had did an off day between us four, it didn't matter. We were still going to win.
Hmm. So, you just said I scored 18 goals. I'm shocked.
14.
I'm really shocked.
18 in all comps that season.
I'm really shocked that I'd scored 18. Right. I honestly, if you had said to me, give me a number, I would have said maximum 10.
Right.
No, genuinely, I wouldn't. But to be fair, we both, you know, had like Razor on one side, who, and I mean this in the nicest possible way, could play football with me all day long. And what I mean is he could pass it to me, he'd move, I'd pass it back. Mm. We could keep the ball. And we had Barnsley on the other side. They could do what he did. And
anything.
He's on about, like, you know, I saw the semi-final goal yesterday where Barnes, he just puts it like an old old volleys at him, like, probably hip-height. It's, like, unbelievable.
But you played that ball in behind. And so many quality goals. That goal, that piece, I remember it. One goal this season, but Bruce got the ball and he rolled it out to Abbo, God rest his soul. Abbo just played about a 10-yard ball to Peter, who just took it and whipped it into Barnes, who was on his way. And when he's on his way, I'm on my way. Then I peel to the far post, and I knew, you know what? And he's put in a great ball, and it just, you know, it's a great team goal, and that's what we were all about. The other one that season, you got to take. We played Arsenal at home in the league, and I scored the first goal. We won 2-0. Peter scored the second goal, but if you watch that back, well, we've got them hemmed in. The cops there, the buzzing, you see that it's a great atmosphere, and it's just before half time, and then Barnes, he goes in and he gets the ball, and Peter's nearly scores, but he gets ricocheted out, and when Steve McMahon ran to the side, he got hold of the wall, pushed the wall, went back, and he done this little shimmy, and then played it to Peter, who had the shot, and I tapped it in, I mean 20 inch in, and I always followed it in when the lad shot. Just slid it in. If you want to see the cop, that goal epitomised what we were all about.
Yeah.
People say about the football today, and it's a change. You have a look at that goal, you see the pace of what we were playing on that day, and it's there. I tell you what, the pace, that summed us up. Then probably them two goals. Unbelievable.
Yeah, Macca was amazing. But,
yeah.
But if it had been the other way around, James, as in their person was running to the touchline, he would have been in the crowd. So that's the difference. Now, to be fair, we all thought, like, fair play to you, Macca. Kept the ball in as he, all those years, he then gets pushed back by the fans. But really, he should have ended up in touch. And I don't mean that nastily. I just mean, in our day.
Macca or Ronnie would have. Yeah.
If it was the other way around, it definitely wouldn't have been a goal.
I mean, you played the same, pretty much in the same sort of starting lineup. You were playing in the same team. You had that rhythm. We were discussing on a previous podcast about we were talking about numbers. Remember when we talked about Ian Callaghan's phenomenal amount of appearances for Liverpool.
Yeah.
And if you break that down over the years, how many games he played per season,
it's
actually comparable to the amount of games that players play these days.
Yeah.
But these days it's all that rotation and it's made out that the intensity is like that much higher. How do you feel the intensity back then kind of compares to what you observe now in terms
I think, to be fair, also, when you look at the amount of minutes that people play now, so there's not many. So Alan Hansen would have played every game, every minute. But now, like, they'll take Van Dijk off if they're winning and they're comfortable, you know. And so the minutes are probably what I examine more than the games, because in our day, most of the time, if you started a game, you were going to finish it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the great thing. But we had so few players that Kenny couldn't have 8 on the bench or 9 on the bench, you know. So
we had 2 on the bench in them days, didn't
we? Yeah, we had 2.
But also if you had a little bit of a injury, you get on with it. You wouldn't want to miss out on the game and say you're injured, because you lose your place.
Mm.
So you would have a little cortisone here or a little cortisone there just to get through it. But we were mentally tough. So we never, hardly anyone was injured.
So really what you are saying is that the intensity back then was as high as now, maybe high?
Yeah, to be fair, I think everybody's, yes, people physically in the modern world can run faster than they used to. But you look at the 100 meters, 20 years ago, the difference in the times to now are like unbelievable. But that's just nature, and that's the way the world is, you know. But in our day, basically you just, you play until you drop. Whereas Aldo says, even if you were injured, you were the only person that knew. So he didn't say this, oh, I feel a bit stiff today or whatever. You never told anybody. You just got on with it. And then, to be fair, if somebody ended up having an operation, which didn't always happen, but some people do, you know, people then say, oh, he's been injured for a while, but he never said anything. And that's the thing. We didn't have a physio. We didn't have a physio coming to the training ground. We didn't have a physio coming to the training ground. The only people that used to treat me or Aldo in our time was Ronnie Moran and Roy Evans.
Bugsy and Neville, weren't
they? They used to put,
the doctor used to come in once every 2 days.
Yeah, they used to put the machine on for 10 minutes before you went out training, and that
sometimes
was it.
Sometimes the machine wasn't, I think we spoke about that, the machine wasn't working once.
Yeah.
And Paul Walsh was getting treatment. He said, oh, this is getting better. It's been broke for 6 months. Built the mega pulse machine.
Well, also, there was times where we had to go to the physio's house. So at Formby or this side of the river, you know, we had to go and basically go there on a night. If you wanted proper treatment or you needed proper treatment or you needed something done, you'd have to go to see them. They didn't come to you.
So it is fascinating though, isn't it? Like you always think, or maybe you think, like, how would I fare in my prime right now in the Premier League era? I know it's apples and pears because you look at like the environment and all the help that the players get now that you didn't have. Never mind the flying on the bus, the physio. I mean, the list is endless of differences. But it would be fascinating to know how you guys in your prime would fare in the Premier League these days if you had been born into this era. You know, but
the biggest fear for some of us was now wouldn't want to fly.
Really?
People like Nico and that wouldn't want to fly. You know, but to be fair, when you look at it, even though we didn't have what they've got now, nobody's fault, we had the best of what was possible at that time because times were different, but we had the best of everything, you know, and we got, well, spoiled, really got spoiled. And everybody does at a professional level. But now, through no fault of the players, it's gone to another level.
Yeah, sure.
So 87, 88, you've won the league at Cantor. FA Cup final, everyone's expecting the double to be celebrated.
Can we just bypass this, please?
I thought you might say that.
Someone missed a penalty, no?
Because obviously, you know what it's like. In the aftermath, everyone says Liverpool were guilty of being complacent, underestimated Wimbledon. You know, the Wimbledon players tell stories about, they thought they could just turn up and win.
No.
I take it, how do you look back on that?
No, definitely not at all. They were having antics in the tunnel, but we were just laughing about them. You know, we know all the lads. We knew them. We got on with them. They're good lads. But they were trying their best. And to be fair, they were brilliant on the day. You've got to give them full credit. They played a great game and the tactics were good. And we underperformed a little bit. I don't know what you think about this. When Peter scored the goal against Tottenham, we won the league 1-0 at Anfield. We went out celebrated that day and whatever and all that. And then between then and the cup final, which was a few games, a few weeks, we sort of, we drew with Luton 1-1 and we weren't at it. We weren't, this is only what I'm thinking. No. We weren't what we were doing because complacency might have come in, obviously. And the league's gone anyway. But when we got to the FA Cup day, we'd lost our momentum.
Yeah. You can't just then step up.
That's my excuse. I thought we weren't at it. We just were off it because we weren't pushed till the end of the season to win the league. And that's the excuse that I can come up with. And it might be way, way, way off it, but that's what I think because we weren't at what we were good at during most of that season. And then Peter scored a great goal. I missed the hill. Look, unfortunately enough, he just didn't wait that split second to play the advantage. I got a penalty, which was a good, really good challenge, to be fair. I just went over his legs and he gives the penalty. And it's the best fucking save I've ever seen in my life.
But also, James, I don't know if you've seen it recently, but if you have a look at it, VAR would make him take it again.
Oh, he's right.
Because he's off. Afari is off the line. Yeah.
He's well gone. And I don't mean that.
No, he's right.
He wouldn't have saved it any other way. Because to be fair, it's not like it's not in the corner, but he's 7 foot. You know, so he has got an advantage. His arms, he's 9 foot.
He told me that. He's good.
He's a good lad.
He's a really good lad.
Yeah, he's good. He came to Newcastle.
That's right, yeah. That penalty got him the move. Anyway, so I spoke to him afterwards. He said, all my penalties, and I'd scored every one. he said, I put most of them right in the top right-hand corner. I did. And that's before I come up with my stutter and my stammer, whatever, on the penalties. He said, I was just going to take a chance, take two steps out and just try and block off that side of the goal. And he did. And it was too, well, he's way off. But look, credit to him. He worked the head and he made a decent, it wasn't right in the corner, but it was a decent penalty. It was a decent penalty, but he did you done it? He worked the head on and done
well. Well, that's his look, isn't it? As yeah. in, that's him scoring the goal, in a sense.
Yeah.
You know, like all those scored goals for fun. So gets all the credit for that. But yeah. when he makes that save, he wins in the cup, you know, yeah. and obviously great for them to win. Because obviously, when you look at most things, you can break them down and you can say this and you can see that. But most games on the day, the team that works the hardest and does what they normally do deserves to win. So we had no complaints. Nobody, in my memory, nobody was sulking in the dressing room. It was one of them things. Just move on.
I was fucking crying in the toilet, that's why.
Yeah, so that's why I never saw you in the dressing room.
and then, of course, 88, 89... is a season like no other. You have, you know, all the emotion of having to deal with Hillsborough. I mean, for you two, that must have just been incredibly difficult when suddenly you find, you know, one minute it's just all about the football. The next minute you're attending funerals, going to hospitals. I mean, you must have thought, how do we even go back to playing football again?
Well, yeah, it was horrendous. It really was. The biggest game of my career. And I don't know if I've touched on this in any of the podcasts because I'm very forgetful. The semi-final, the biggest game of my career, because that was the game that we had to win because of the
Is that
the
Old Trafford, that one? Yeah.
And we won 3-1. Managed to get a couple of goals, which helped. But that even bigger than the final, that was the one that we could not lose. And my stomach before that game was in bits. The thought of going out and coming back in that dressing room, knowing you've got beaten for the families, and it was horrendous. Absolutely horrendous for me.
No, well, obviously being from this part of the world as well, although like it affected all of us, but the locals in particular, and obviously we consider Kenny local as in now, and like what he went through, you know, for the people of Hillsborough, you know, Aldo will remember, like, obviously, sadly, when we got brought in, like, to be fair to Kenny, he tried to go out and try and not calm people down, but try and help them.
Yeah.
But Graham Kelly wouldn't let him go.
That's right, yeah.
And so it was just like the biggest man in the whole event of that game should have been allowed to go and talk to the Liverpool fans. Might not have made a difference, we don't know, but it certainly wouldn't have done any harm.
Yeah. What was it like being part of that All Merseyside FA Cup final?
I was lucky in a sense that I ended up playing all the game where Aldo and Rushy swapped, but I was the lucky one, but it didn't work because at the end of the next week, Kenny left me out of the team. He played Aldo and Rushy for the Arsenal game. But it's just, to be fair to Kenny, you know, Rushy needed games because obviously Aldo was the main man at the time. And so Rushy almost needed to be flat out every day, and he was a brilliant. So he's the, I would say for Aldo as well, the best number nine at working back ever and getting the ball back. Incredible. You know, obviously Kenny taught him that. And so he was good, but he basically, in my opinion of watching him, how good he was, he always like just shot on sight. You know, he didn't put many things in the corners. He just hit the ball, you know, not in a negative way, but he had this way of just pace on the ball as quick as he could. And it just, when it works really well. But to be fair to him, he was a workaholic and obviously very popular. So I didn't, although obviously seen him before he left to go to Juventus, but I didn't. So I only knew him second time around. But to be fair, brilliant, funny man, really funny man.
In the modern game, I'd be perfect. You know, you rest, I rest, Rushy rests. Wouldn't work in them days.
Yeah.
We want to play 90 minutes every single game. And Peter's the same, and Ian's the same. So it was probably never going to work. And, you know, obviously I was the one that paid the price when we got the door opened and closed on me to go to Spain. But that would have been something Kenny should have relished more than anything, I'd have thought. You know, 3 players, the capabilities, we all have different capabilities. We could all play with each other. You know, So people have got their own thoughts on that. But yeah, to play in that team, you know, with Peter in behind, and in the 88, and then, you know, Ray and Barnes, he was probably the best player in Europe at the time, Barnes. He must
oh,
have,
yeah, without, yeah.
You know, it was
yeah.
just superstar. It was like Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, really, for me, because I would get the ball down. I'm just playing along the shoulders, the centre halves, and or the right backs. I'm getting the ball down, and then I'm looking at the lads there. I just used to give it them one touch, two touch maximum. I'm not a dribbler, I can't dribble. Give it to one lad, and they do the damage. The lads do the damage piece of it. I just get in the box, then go to the far post and look to what they can feed off me, you know. And I bingo, got the golden boots. Without them lads, I would never have got the golden boots.
Well, that's the great thing for somebody like me, James, because I wanted to be out of the box and he wants to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what was really good. And that's why Kenny was brilliant. And I really mean like the best number seven ever at Liverpool. But I was amazed that he didn't try the three of us. So if you look at teams now, teams now will try with two up front and one behind.
Yeah.
You know, whoever it is, Tottenham do that now with Madison. You know, a lot of teams do that where Kenny obviously had his way of working and it was... What Aldo explained about obviously Ray and Barnes, he gave us the width, and then it was like a man behind the front man. Where if he'd have put them two together, he even left me out for a few games, I'm sure they would have worked it out and ended up scoring goals like they did for fun, the both of them. Incredible that he could have two. I know he wore number eight, but two number nines to score that amount of goals over that period was fantastic.
Yeah, how do you look back on that title decider against Arsenal?
Yeah, to be fair, we had a game on the Tuesday before we played on the
West Ham.
Yeah, and we beat West Ham 5, I think.
5-1, yeah.
Yeah, and so because of that, we didn't need to win.
Yeah, you could lose by one and still be champions, yeah.
So that was probably the worst thing that happened
in
the sense of, you know, but for me, James, it was like, not strange, but obviously Kenny said that I mentioned just a few minutes ago about the FA Cup where I basically played all of it and they played an hour each. So that's why I played them two together. And I'm not complaining about that. That's like what he chose. Because at the end of the day, if it works, you're right. If it's wrong, you're wrong. And so that's where it was. But to be fair, my missus was expecting my first child or our first child. And so she went into labour in the afternoon.
Right.
So she wasn't even at the game. So basically, after the game, I now go to hospital. My mum's come down from Carlisle to look after her. And so we didn't have any other kids. So it's just, so I went to the hospital afterwards. And then, so I leave the hospital probably about 11:30, go home. And then first thing in the morning, probably about 7:30, I get a phone call from the hospital at home saying your wife, will not be long sort of thing, you know, but like nicely. And I thought it was 9:30. I said, I'll be in about 11:30. And so the nurse had gone to my wife and said, is he laid back about this time?
Mm-hmm.
He said, he'll be in at 11:30. And so if I had gone in at 11:30, I'd have missed it. He was born at 10:47. But I went to hospital. And so we obviously were gutted, really gutted.
That must be the most bittersweet.
Yeah.
For anyone. No,
what, 24 hours. Right?
Well, that's from going there.
Yeah,
And that's the thing. And so, yes, I'm gutted. But that helped us in terms of having a child, you know. And to be fair, England were playing Scotland that day, and because of the Arsenal game, Liverpool game, none of us could play for England. Right. So Tony Adams, people like that, none of us could play for England because of obviously the two games collided, really.
1989-1990, Aldo is off to Real Sociedad, and then 1990-1991, Doug Leash shocks the football world, resigning after 4-4 against Everton. Souness comes in, and then actually shortly after you do something relatively unusual as well, joining Everton, right? So how did that, first of all, how did it feel with Kenny leaving, Souness coming in, and then your departure to go across the park to the other side?
Yeah, so Kenny, obviously we all know, is amazing. And I, in some quarters, not in all quarters, I got the blame for him going, saying it was my fault. But to be fair to him and Marina, as in his missus, we lived two doors from them. And honestly, he was amazing. And I really mean, in my time here, because we were talking before about times he could have left me out of the team, even if he couldn't play, or even if he thought I was better than Walshy, there were times when Walshy maybe deserved a try. And I don't mean that ever. But Kenny was amazing to me. So I never had an issue. But I got the blame for him leaving. Like, but I don't know why. But anyway, so when Graham Souness came in, and Aldo will remember this. So Graham Souness come in, and so he was talking about different things in the dressing room in the first chat. And basically, it's just one of them things where he was just not bigger than everybody else. He was like a really nice man, but you just knew there was going to be big changes. Mm. But you don't think you're going to be one of them.
Yeah.
So we got the pre-season. We're in Gothenburg, and we got a game on that night. So we're having lunch, as we did, and then you went for an afternoon sleep in our time. You know, so, like, I don't know if they still do that. I don't mean that in a bad way. What I mean is they might go for a rest, but they might not sleep. But our day, you slept.
The captain, yeah.
Yeah, you had a good 2 hours, maybe three.
Oh,
yeah. So anyway, so he said, before you go up, we had our pre-match, we've got a game on the night, going for a sleep. So Barnes has already gone up, my roommate. And so Graham says, before you go up, wee man, just want to have a chat with you. So he said, I'm going to sell you. I said, really? I said, what for? Well, I think it might be better for both sides. That's right. So, to be fair to him, I said, who's interested? He said, Everton. And I said, you're happy to sell me to Everton? Oh, yeah. I think it'd be for the best. And to be fair, so he said, there's a flight at 3 o'clock. So from Gothenburg to London. And so he said, go and get your gear and whatever. So obviously I'm rooming with Barnsley. He said, don't tell anybody. I'm rooming with Barnsley. And Barnsley said, where are you going? And I don't know. Yeah. So I told Barnsley, and then he said, so then I come down.
What did he say? What the fuck?
To be fair, I can't tell you what I
do. No, yeah.
So anyway, I come down the stairs and Grimmie told me not to say anyway. And John Keith, who obviously you'll know very well, very well, a good man.
Yeah.
He said, you're off to Everton, aren't you? I said, who told you? He said, the gaffer. I said, he told me not to tell anybody. Honestly. So I come back. And so I fly into London, but there's a flight to Manchester tomorrow, as in I could have got that. And so when I met Howard in London, so he had a driver bring them down. When I met Howard, he went, this is a nightmare for me. I said, you haven't seen me play yet. He said, no, I don't mean that. He said, there's a flight to Manchester tomorrow. You could have come on that. I've had to drive all the way down here. And so that's fine. And so he said, brilliant for us, though. This is what he said. He said, brilliant for us. He said, I know what you get a week. We'll give you £1,000 a week more. He said, we'll give you a brand new car. You don't have to move house. He said, deal done. And there was no agents in those days, so... I said, yeah, no problem. He said, let's have a drink. I said, I don't drink. He said, the deal's off. he said, he was joking. But so he must have had, and this is not a negative because he was amazing. He really was amazing. He must have had certainly one bottle of champagne, maybe half of another.
Yeah.
And so he said, we're going at 6:30 in the morning. So at 6:30 in the morning, I'm downstairs, and he's downstairs, to be fair to him. But you could imagine having another drink. He doesn't look great. But I don't know at the time he's the driver. So when we get in the car, maybe, you know, I'm sitting in the front and I'm thinking, I should have gone to the back. But to be fair to him, and I really mean this, he was amazing.
Like, nice
from,
man.
From the minute, from leaving the banter, and he said, I want you to come over to Everton and do what you've done for Liverpool. Meaning, whatever you do, you do it. Like, don't, like, win trophies. He wasn't like that. He just said, I bought you for what I've seen, and I want you to do that.
And we don't want to talk about what you achieved for Everton too much. I mean, there's not much that was achieved, you know, but your goal-to-game ratio was actually very, very similar
very good.
Between Liverpool and Everton.
You know, the biggest thing, I think, was the fact that, you know, when you go from Liverpool to Everton, and, you know, there's not been many players, you know, you get the respect, you know, Peter... What you have from both sides of the fence. Gary Ablett was very similar, but that says everything.
Yeah,
that says everything. You can walk.
Came back to
you can go to town and walk with your head up high in town, And everyone, you know, that's what your football did. You know, it didn't matter.
The cop chanted your name, didn't they, when you came back?
Yeah, not to be fair. I have to say it sounds really weird, but one of the best days ever. Because they were amazing. They realised I didn't want to go.
Yeah.
You know, and to be fair, Dean Saunders, who got on really well with Aldo, and I was really funny, really. He wasn't a Liverpool number seven in the true sense of the word, having had Keegan Dagley.
He's a striker.
You know, he was a goal scorer.
Goal scorer, yeah.
Yeah. And to be fair, I know this, not in a negative way, but because of Barnsley, and Aldo will tell you, when you come in as a Liverpool player, you want to know what's happened across the park. Have they won? And that was always not the focus, but always interested in that. And so he was obviously doing the same, to be fair to him. But I know that he was, when we'd won, as in Everton or whatever, as Beardsley scored. And I was quite lucky that in my first season at Everton, I scored more than he scored for Liverpool. So I'm quite happy with that. Yeah. But to be fair, as a person, really good person, just not a Liverpool number seven in my opinion, but not a bad person, really good person.
Well, this is the John Aldridge Aldo Meets podcast with my friends, PC, Peter, and Peter.
So Peter, on the international stage, 59 caps for England. People obviously remember of Mexico 86, your performance against Poland and unlocking Lineker. What was that whole experience like being part of that World Cup?
Oh, amazing to be a part of a World Cup, yeah, absolutely. But to be fair, and I mean this nicely, James, everybody talks about me making goals, even for Aldo. Nah, it doesn't happen. And I don't mean that in a negative way, I really don't. So everybody talked about the Poland game. That Poland game changed everybody's lives.
Yeah.
And the reason, obviously, so Bobby Robson was brilliant, really, really brilliant. But he said to us, so he had a whiteboard, imagine that's the whiteboard, and he's flicking through what every team can do, this result, this result, this result. But having given us all the scenarios, the best thing he said was, if we lose, we're going home. And it sounds, he was that calm. And everybody just don't want to go home. So we end up beating Poland 3-0. Obviously, Gary scores a hat-trick. But I can honestly say I was only involved in one of the goals. And so that was, I passed the ball up the line to Steve Hodge, who crossed it the first time, then Gary scored. But other than that, I can't remember making him a goal. And I'm not negative about it because I love him. And he was perfect for me because even if I didn't make any goals for him, everybody thought I did. So it kept me in the team. It's quite weird because Mark Haley was in the team when I first got the chance. And then obviously when Sir Bobby obviously left and then Graham Taylor becomes a manager, he picked Steve Bull instead of me, which was quite strange, but it is what it is.
So you scored against Paraguay to help England into the quarterfinals, and then the infamous game against Argentina, the hand of God. Two questions. One, did you know straight away he had handballed it? And secondly, could you have brought him down in the build-up to his wonder goal?
So, no, is to the second bit. Couldn't have brought him down. I was nowhere near him. And I really mean that. So he spins away from me and Peter Reid. But I have to be honest, James, and don't take this the wrong way, I was very clever. And what I mean by that is I knew I couldn't catch him. Well, if you look at Peter Reid trying to chase him now, he looks like a muppet. And I love Reid. So when Reid does talkings and all that, he blames me. Nothing to do with me. I'm a centre forward. So even if he got the ball on his own like goal line, it's not my job to stop him. So really blames me. But anyway, now to be fair, the second goal was amazing. You know, I really mean amazing. The first one was really clever. Really, really clever. Yeah.
Did you know straight away?
Oh, yeah. So I can't lie. I didn't see him punch the ball, but I knew by Peter Shilton's reaction. Because to be fair to Shilts, he was not a mourner, but he knew when he was right.
Yeah, yeah.
And his reaction. But also, you see, you might not have seen any footage, but I can picture Bobby Robson going up and down knowing it's going to go against us. But to be fair to the people at the time, I genuinely think they just made a mistake. I don't think they knew, you know, excuse me, but it is what it is. But to be fair to him, his second goal was amazing. But we went into the... So there was a drug test for that game, after the game. And obviously the people had to get drug tested. So they come in and they give you a number. So this was unusual in 86, quite early. So I was one of the ones getting drug tested. There was number 3, Kenny Sansom, Terry Butcher, number 6, and myself, 20. And then for them, it was Jorge Lewis Brown, the goalie, Pompido, the goalie, sorry, Jorge Lewis Brown, the number 9, and Maradona. So they are now in our room. And like Terry had been punching the walls and everything next door, and we're thinking, well, gotta say something in a minute. And like, but to be fair, it was almost like Maradona wasn't there. And it was just weird that he didn't react and do something about it. It was just, but to be fair to Maradona, I'm being big-headed now, he said I was the best English player, not in the game, but before the World Cup, how I was the best English player and the most important to the team at the time. So for somebody like him to say that, and to be fair, he was amazing. So.
He'd been better if he gave you his fucking share, wouldn't he?
To be fair.
How many million? 7 million or something?
Yeah, to be fair.
You missed out on that one, mate,
to be fair, though, although you know, like, didn't even think of it. And I really mean this, no? Never thought. So I never swapped with anybody, James, unless I
never,
knew. Right, so right, Ray right. Houghton, Ireland. So Alan Hansen, Scotland. You know, unless I'd played against them or with them, I didn't. Right. You know, so wasn't something. So I never dreamt of it. But Steve Hodge, when he tells his story.
Fair play to him.
And to be fair to him, I don't begrudge him. All I begrudge him is, he said that me and Waddle were trying to fight Maradona for it. So Waddle might have been. I was not. not whether I'm thick or whatever. Not a chance was I after that shift. As I just told you, never swapped unless I knew them. You know, but to be fair to Maradona, he was a superstar. And to be fair to Hodgie, good luck to him. But never been motivated by money, so it wouldn't bother. If I had got that shirt, I'd still have it now. And I don't mean that in a negative way, Hodgie. How much money do you need?
Yeah.
And Peter, just before we go into our famous quiz at the end, and we got a feeling you're going to do well in that, in terms of achievements that you are most proud of as a player, one thing that you would pick, what's your proudest moment?
So it sounds really stupid, Pete, but it's not as a player. It's when I got my MBE off the Queen. So I was given a date, but then I was given a date that she couldn't do. So I chose to postpone it. You're allowed to do that. And so I was at Newcastle at the time. We were top of the league at the time. And so what you do, I don't know if you know, but so imagine we come in there and you walk along the room to meet the Queen. Looking across through a glass door is your family. So they walk at the same pace so they can see you. And to be fair to her, she was brilliant. We were top of the league at the time. She said, "You're doing well at the moment, top of the league, and really nice."
Nice.
And she said, when I finished, she said, "I hope you win the league." And genuinely, she was lovely, really. And that was probably the most special football moment I had. And this, the reason I say that is because I wouldn't have got that MBE without football. But she was amazing. She really was amazing. And obviously, Aldo was there. We were lucky enough to meet Lady Di, you know, in the cup final.
Yeah.
You know, things that you can't put a price on.
Sure.
You know, the royal family are amazing now. You know, I hope Prince Charles comes through what he's, well, King Charles now, come through what he's going through, you know.
Princess Di was fit.
Yeah, to be fair, she was
fit.
She was.
Very, very attractive.
So I wouldn't say.
I mean, that in a nice way.
Sure. I would say definitely attractive.
Usually when you say someone is fit, it's in a nice way. But
I might explain the scouts word fit. But no, she was amazing. But to be fair to her, she obviously done a bit of homework and was talking to us and that, you know, so just a shame that she didn't give us the cup.
Right, for our famous quiz, the 6 questions Peter has to face, and he's, to be fair, he should do better than Steve Nicol.
To be fair,
he didn't have 8 pints, to be fair.
I'm going home if I don't.
It's 6 questions, Pete, because Liverpool's won the European Cup 6 times, mate. You know, twice more than the nearest one English team, which is, you know.
To be fair, I'm glad you're, so I'm glad you're talking about it. I would have thought it was five.
So James is the quiz master. So right. Where you go, lad?
Number one, who did you make your Liverpool debut against?
As in Arsenal.
As in Arsenal, yeah. Correct.
I wasn't sure. I thought he was going to say the first day of the season or whatever.
Number two.
You're drawing with Steve Nicholson.
So you scored your first goal for Liverpool later that same month, August 87, away to which team?
I'm guessing, yeah, and I am guessing because I wasn't sure it was that early. Coventry?
Correct. 2 out of 2.
I've won.
Number three, you and John Barnes, as we talked about earlier, arrived in that summer of 87. Who was signed 2 months into that season?
I would say Ray Houghton.
Yeah. Correct. You scored 59 goals in total for Liverpool, but against which club did you score the most?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have got that.
It was 6, if you want a clue.
6?
There was a few that you scored 4 against.
That's it.
I would do better.
You might have played for them.
Yeah, for once. It can't be Man U.
No.
No, I wouldn't have got it. Go on, who is it?
Everton.
I wouldn't have got it.
Yeah, you got 6 right. Against Everton.
No, I wouldn't have known that.
Right, that's 3 out of 4. Number 5. Who did you make your final Liverpool appearance against in May 1991?
Wouldn't have a clue. Genuinely wouldn't have a clue. No, so to be fair...
Last game of the season.
Did I actually start or did I...
I don't have that information to hand.
Yes, you do, but you're not telling me. That's fine.
It was a London-based club, if that helps.
London-based? Watford?
Tottenham?
I wouldn't have got that.
Number 6.
You draw them with Steve Nicholl.
You're lying. You're telling me you've got 2. I've got 3.
No, what are you messing with, mate?
Right. Which manager said this about you? He's already just about the best player in England. Add 20 goals a season at Liverpool and he'll become a megastar. A name to bracket alongside Maradona and Johan Cruyff. He's a bargain at £2 million. He's a little wizard. You played for him.
Bobby Robson is
Bobby one. Robson.
Yes.
Yeah. So, that's so, four, eight, six.
To be fair.
Not bad.
The other two I would never go.
That makes
sense.
Brilliant. Enjoyed thanks renewing me, acquaintances with my best, one of my best partners. I can't say the best, although it's one's feeling. Thanks, Pete. It's been
thanks great. For, great thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for
thank you.